Marcus Sahaba Online Radio, empowering the Ummah.
Welcome, ya Mustafa.
Welcome. Ay khatm e rasul. شاہ رسول شاہ انبیاء شاہ مدینہ شاہ مدینہ چمکا دے میرا دل دل چمکا دے میرا دل چمکا دے چمکا دے میرا دل چمکا دے چمکا دے میرا دل یا رسول اللہ چمکا دے میرا دل چمک تجھ سے پاتے ہیں سب پانے والے چمک تجھ سے پاتے ہیں سب پانے والے
میرا دل بھی چمکا دے چمکانے والے میرا دل بھی چمکا دے چمکانے والے
برستا نہیں دیکھ کر اب رے رحمت برستا نہیں دیکھ کر
بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ اہلاً وسہلاً ومرحباً بكم and welcome to Medical Matters with myself Brother Sulaiman Isub every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. Today being the 2nd of Rabi'ul Akhir 1447 corresponding to Wednesday the 24th of September 2025 I will be keeping you company for the next hour until 9 p.m. You can send all your medical questions through to the numbers 084-786-3132. International overseas listeners, +27 84 786 3132. Inshallah, we're going to be continuing with our last week's topic. Today is part two of how to defend my respiratory system. And on the line, we have our very own Dr. Amin Melrose. Doctor, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. Pleased to be with you again.
I mean, Jazakallah Khairan. Doc, now last week we ended off our show with asthma. And many questions have come in with regards to asthma from our listeners and loved ones. The first question, the sub-question is it hereditary?
Yes, that's a very, very good question. And I can give you a very short answer, in fact. Although there is a hereditary predisposition to the condition, environmental factors in most cases play the major role in bringing on an asthma attack. So it's mainly environmental, not so much hereditary, although it does give a predisposition.
Doc, can a child outgrow asthma?
Well, many children do outgrow this condition. That is, their bronchi become less sensitive to irritants. And at the same time, however, the bronchioles may continue to react without the sufferer noticing the response. So the child may outgrow the problem in a sense, while unfortunately the basic condition does continue to exist.
Okay, now Jazakallah Khairan. Now, can it evolve into an adulthood if a child has it during their childhood? Can it progress further into their adulthood?
Well, you know, as you said, that if the condition becomes less sensitive to irritants, the bronchioles may continue to react without the sufferer noticing, but the child can outgrow this problem. The child can outgrow this problem in a sense. But remember that the basic condition does continue to exist.
Can smoking affect a smoker's asthma?
Well, tobacco smoke is a bronchial irritant, and it increases the production of mucus, which an asthma sufferer can do without. Even if tobacco smoke alone does not trigger an asthma attack, the additional irritation that it causes to your sensitive respiratory network may well make it easier for an asthma attack to occur if you are a smoker.
Now, Doc, what do I do in an emergency if I'm having an asthma attack? Should I call a loved one? Should I call a doctor? What's the procedures and steps?
Right. It's a difficult question because it could have a number of answers. But the one I'm going to give you here is I can think of a patient who has a daughter who is asthmatic. And he always agonizes over when to call a doctor when she starts having an attack. Now, this is what I would recommend. If her asthma attack gets worse than normal, even though she's taken the prescribed medicine and done everything else that she's been instructed to do, then yes, then you call a doctor. If she suffers from the most serious kind of asthma, that is, it's known as status asthmaticus, which is resistant to treatment, then she will urgently need a doctor's attention and will most likely be admitted to hospital. The usual medicines and drugs may not give her relief. Remember, an overdose of medication can have serious consequences, and her inability to inhale enough oxygen may become critical. Now, during such an attack, which may last several days if not treated, she may turn a bluish color, she may sweat profusely, and she may gasp frantically for air. Now, status asthmaticus is a life-threatening emergency. Make sure that the attending doctor is informed of what treatment and medication she has already been given so that there is no chance of overdosing.
Doc, when a person uses a Ventis or an asthma pump, as it's commonly known, how many shots must a person use? Because I notice a lot of people go beyond three shots. What is the recommended dosage for an asthmatic person?
Well, it's actually one, but it depends. The doctor may have a different opinion. It depends, of course, on the strength, if you like, of the asthma attack. So you can't just legislate just one. It depends on the person, depends on the age, depends on the attack, and it depends on the doctor's experience as well.
Now, Doc, I know people who generally play outdoor activities, and after maybe an hour and a half, they take an asthma shot, and even during Ramadan, you know, when we're fasting, asthmatic people, I know a family member of mine, he takes an asthma pump. He's asthmatic, and he takes it before starting his fast. Now, can Doc give us a little breakdown on that there? Now, I know your Doc mentioned when a person is having an asthma attack, right, then we use the recommended dosage. But if a person is like playing outdoor activities, what's the recommended dosage?
Well, medications to prevent or to stop an attack, although there are many drugs that prevent or stop an asthma attack, they don't take any without having conducted your doctor. You have to consult your doctor. Now, one of the most commonly used drugs is called, and I'm going to spell it after I've pronounced it, it's theophylline. Theophylline. So having spelled that, we pronounce it theophylline. Now, this is a compound related to caffeine, believe it or not. And it can be taken in a liquid or a tablet form. and your bronchodilators, similar to adrenaline or epinephrine compounds, which can be taken in, you can take them in an aerosol tablet, you could take it in an injection form, you may also, it may also improve effective that way. Now, the aerosol is quite important. I can think of a young lady who was caught up in an accident, and she immediately, because of the panic, she immediately shouted for her aerosol, which proved absolutely wonderful, and it calmed her right down. Now, there's another one called Lomudal, which is normally used to prevent allergic and exercise-induced asthma. Now, that's what we're getting right down to now. It can be taken as in inhaled powder with an aerosol, or it can be taken with a nebulizer. Now, as asthma is an inflammatory condition of the bronchioles, the mainstay of treatment is the inhalation of steroids, which need to be inhaled regularly to prevent attacks from starting. So this would be in the case of an athlete when exercise has been taking place. But there's something to note here. They are not effective once an attack has already started. They are often used in conjunction with bronchodilators. Now, taken as inhalants, they do not have the severe side effects that steroids taken by mouth or by injection can have, although these may be necessary in severe cases.
Doc, when a person uses an asthma pump, right, and I notice that they hold it in for a certain period of time, like maybe for about 10 to 20 seconds.
Yes, that's special relaxation techniques, you know, that they need to relax, they need to inhale, and they need to let the moti, as it were, the aerosol, to have an effect. Most definitely, that's really, really important. So after that, of course, they will obviously have to relax, and we'll have to have a look at that one.
Gee. Now, that's our next question that I was going to ask you. Are there any special techniques with regards to an asthmatic person or an asthma?
Yes. Yes, they are. And I would suggest that, you know, as we do every week, that our listeners actually have a writing pad in front of them and a pen, and they need to write down these things because they're not easy to remember. So getting back then to your question about these special relaxation techniques, there are a number of techniques, including yoga and biofeedback, that can help the patient to relax. But here's one that I would really recommend. Whilst the patient is sitting in a chair with their eyes closed and their arms hanging down at their sides, and they give themselves a few minutes to get used to this position, then they contract and relax various parts of the body whilst breathing evenly. So let's go through this a step at a time. Contract, or stiffen, if you like, your facial muscles for a count of two. Remember, you're sitting on a chair, your arms are down on your sides, you're relaxing, you're getting used to your position, and you start off by contracting or drawing up, stiffening your facial muscles for a count of two, then you relax them for a count of four. Right. Then from there, you move on to your shoulders. So from the face, you go to the shoulders, your arms, and your fists. Use them as a unit, right? We're going to look at all three of them as the second step now. Now you contract these muscles for a count of two again, and then relax them for a count of four. Right. So the next thing is to contract and relax the muscles of your legs and your feet. All right. You're working down from the top to the bottom. You repeat this whole routine several times. You practice the entire routine or entire sequence a few times per day for several weeks. I would say three or four times a day for several weeks. Now, this routine is done without neglecting, listen to this one, without neglecting your walk. That is your three to four times a week. And, of course, what we discussed last week the leg raises, also 3 to 4 times per week.
Now, Doc, with regards to pneumonia that is sometimes preceded by chest pains and chills, can Doc please explain this here? And coming out of breathlessness, and how serious is this when it comes to bronchial pneumonia and you get acute pneumonia, or sometimes it's known as water in the lungs, Doc?
Yeah, right. Getting onto pneumonia then, it's sometimes, as you mentioned, it's preceded by chest pains and breathlessness. So how serious is this? Now, shortly after complaining about chest pains and chills and breathlessness, a colleague at work had to be rushed to hospital. Let me repeat that. Shortly after complaining about chest pains and chills and breathlessness, a colleague at work had to be rushed to hospital and was found to be suffering from pneumonia. Now, pneumonia is an infection that can stem from any one of more than, wait for it, more than 30 different causes. And it affects the air sacs or the alveoli in the lungs. That's the air sacs in the lungs. Now, in fighting such an infectious invasion, the air sacs fill up with white blood cells, with pus also, and mucus and other body liquids, which is a reaction that makes it difficult for the oxygen, the needy oxygen, to reach. Now, the blood makes it difficult for the oxygen, in fact, to reach the bloodstream. The infection can spread to the entire body through the bloodstream. And I want to give you the three main causes of pneumonia. And these are they. Firstly, bacteria, which we'll have a look at. And then viruses, and also what they call mycoplasmas. There are three, in fact, of these possible causes of pneumonia.
Now, Doc, how serious is pneumonia? And why do some people, after being operated, they develop pneumonia?
Yeah, now that's also an interesting one. We'll definitely get onto that. It's a really interesting one. I think that one would need to first of all, to look at this bacterial pneumonia, the viral pneumonia, and the mycoplasma. I think one needs to have a look at that firstly. So looking first then at the bacteria. Bacteria can attack anyone, especially those with a sufficiently lowered resistance. And this resistance can perhaps be as a result of old age. It can be as a result of malnutrition or heart disease or lung disease or diabetes. And overexposure to extreme cold conditions without adequate covering can also bring on pneumonia. Now, I think one needs to look at these three specifically. In bacterial pneumonia, the victim becomes breathless, the victim sweats profusely, may have a chest pain or chest pains, and shaking chills. Now, he or she may have enough, may cough, in fact, blood, loose blood, blood-tinged mucus, and may even have a fever as high as 40 degrees centigrade, which is really, really high. And he or she may also develop diarrhea, may develop vomiting and mental confusion, and bacterial pneumonia frequently follows on after flu, influenza, or any other viral infection. Right, so much thing for the bacterial pneumonia. Now, the viral one, the virus pneumonia, I would say that approximately 75% of our pneumonia cases in South Africa are caused by a virus. There's fever, there's a dry cough, there's breathlessness. These are all common symptoms. The majority of cases are never diagnosed. Why not? Because most sufferers do not consult a doctor. They just fight their way through it, unless they are really, really seriously ill. Now, some viral pneumonias are complicated by bacterial infections. Right, so much then for bacterial pneumonia, for viral pneumonia. Then the third one is called a mycoplasma pneumonia. Those are these smaller bacteria that can exist only in living cells. Now, this form of pneumonia, which may come on slowly and is generally, but not always, a mild form. It occurs more frequently among teenagers, believe it or not. Just think of that one. This third one that we're speaking about, the mycoplasma one, occurs mainly among teenagers and young adults. It sometimes referred to as walking pneumonia. Why is that? It's because they carry on walking, they carry on living a normal life, although they've got this pneumonia, and they don't report it. They just fight their way through it. Now, the most prevalent symptom of this walking pneumonia is a hacking cough that brings up only a small quantity of white mucus. Chills and fever may occur at the onset of this mycoplasma pneumonia. It's called mycoplasma pneumonia, followed by a headache, a muscle ache, and earache. Now, less common forms of pneumonia are appearing more frequently today. Among these forms are TB or tuberculosis pneumonia, which, unless treated early, can be extremely dangerous. In those affected with AIDS, pneumonia can be caused by the pneumocystis coronea. Let me spell that. Pneumocystis. Pneumo, P-N-E-U-M-A-C-Y-S-T-I-S, coronae bacterium, which does not affect those with a healthy, functioning immune system. That is important, the immune system. There are still other forms among them, those caused by inhaling of food particles or vomit, poisonous, for example, chlorine or fungi, or bronchial obstruction such as tumors. So there we have it. These are the three types of pneumonia, and one needs to really identify them quite early because they could be life-threatening.
JazakAllah khairan for that. 084-786-3132. International and overseas listeners, +27 84 786 3132. It's 25 minutes past 8 Central African time. And this is The Medical Matters with myself, Brother Suleiman, and we're joined by Dr. Amin Melrose. Doc, my next question, the question that comes in, I'm a 65-year-old and I'm terrified of catching pneumonia. What precaution should I take?
Yeah, there are quite a few that one really, really needs to look at that. One of the best ways for a 65-year-old or an older person to prevent pneumonia is to ensure that you stay healthy. That's bottom line for everything. So there we're looking at a number of things. First one is eat well. In other words, your diet must be a balanced one. Secondly, get adequate rest and exercise. Don't smoke. And if you should contract a cold or flu, take extra care. The vaccine for pneumonia, pneumococcal pneumonia, that's the most common type of bacterial pneumonia, may help to reduce the effects of pneumonia in high-risk groups. I'm going to repeat that. The vaccine for pneumococcal pneumonia. The pneumo is easily spelled. The cocal is C-O-C-C-A-L. That type of pneumonia, the most common type, in fact, of the bacterial pneumonia. And it may help to reduce the effects of pneumonia in high-risk groups. Now, a formula used by myself since 1988, and this will come through again and again as we go through week by week on the different medical things, but it is so important, and I find it such a valuable thing that I'm going to repeat it. A formula that's been used by myself since 1988, and which has prevented coughs, colds, and pneumonia, is as follows. And I suggest that our listeners, if they didn't write it down last week, then they should make a note of it now. Every morning before breakfast, in a mug of hot water, right, a third to half a teaspoon of turmeric, a third to half a teaspoon of ginger, a third to half a teaspoon of cinnamon. And you add to that 2 to 3 teaspoons of honey. You stir it and you drink. Now, that's not the end of it. In addition to that, you need a 1,000 milligram tablet of vitamin C, which, of course, is obtainable from any pharmacy or health shop. And then bottom line, and I'll bring this out from time to time, it really, really is so important, is your exercise. It's essential to get your body moving. You cannot just sit all day watching TV and just sit in the car. You've got to use your legs, your muscles that you've been given. So it's the essential exercise is to walk. That's the easiest one, I would say. Walk 20 minutes or so, 4 to 5 times a week. You might even eventually end up jogging. Wouldn't that be fun? And perhaps also you might end up entering the occasional fun run as you go along. But, of course, before you do any of this, you need to just clear it to your doctor. He knows the level of your health, and he will obviously ease you into this. But walking, exercise, and diet, so, so, so important.
Doc, now we discussed the question that came in was from a 65-year-old, right? Now, obviously, an elderly person will be more conscious and more aware with regards to their health. Now, can Doc give a message to our youngsters who are between the ages of 18 to 35, 40, right? Because they somehow got this mindset that, you know what, I'm young, I'm healthy, nothing's going to happen to me. But the sicknesses can happen to anybody, Doc.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, as I mentioned just now, a very, very important point to note for the youngsters, the teenagers and the young adults, is the mycoplasma pneumonia. These are small, smaller than normal bacteria that can exist only in living cells. Now, this form of pneumonia may come on slowly and is generally, but as I mentioned earlier on, it's not always reported on. It's a mild form. It occurs more frequently, as you've just said now, amongst the teenagers and young adults. It's sometimes referred to, as I mentioned earlier on, also walking pneumonia. And the young people need to take this seriously. They need, if they're getting pains in the chest, they're finding it difficult to breathe, and especially after doing exercise, and maybe even getting a hacking cough, then they need to see to it, go to a doctor immediately, because this could develop later on, and in fact, it can be a life thing. You know, they could be threatening their lives if they don't take it seriously.
Doc, and also in this day and age, there's a lot of vaping that's occurring, and they're using it as a substitute for a cigarette. Now, I believe that with regards to vaping, it can also cause pneumonia, and it can also cause worse. It'll be worse than a cigarette, and when it comes to your chest and asthma, Doc?
Yes, no, I agree with it. I think, honestly, they are bluffing themselves by vaping. They think they're not getting, they feel the need for nicotine, they feel that they're not getting what they need, so they start vaping, and they think, well, now I've avoided all the threats and all the dangers of smoking. Not so. Not so. They're not avoiding anything at all. It's just as bad, and they will have the same problems. And if pneumonia comes along, well, they really are going to take it very, very heavily, because they are not rising above those that are smoking. They are equal with them, and they have the same dangers, the same attacks, and the same results as those who are smoking. So vaping, number one out. If you see somebody vaping, it's he's just dodging. In my opinion, that dodging effect. They're saying, "Oh no, don't smoke or any vape. It's not so serious. It's just as serious." Let me tell you,
Doc. My doctor has told me that I have abscess on my lungs. What is this, and how can it be treated?
Right now, a lung abscess is a very uncommon lung infection, and to my mind, it's got it should be called something else. But anyway, let's run along with the lung abscess. It's caused either by a complication of pneumonia or by an obstruction, an inhaled particle of food, or a broken tooth even, or even a tumor. Now, the infection is, this is all going into the lungs, and the infection can destroy lung tissue. Lung abscesses, this is what it's actually named, are more prevalent among victims of malnutrition or alcoholism. Now, symptoms, listen to this one, symptoms can range from chills, fever, chest pains, to coughing up blood-tinged mucus. The abscess can be located by means of an X-ray. Your doctor will no doubt take a sample of your phlegm and put it through a test that will show what kind of irritant, in fact, caused the abscess. He will prescribe an antibiotic in order to clear it up. Now, in most instances, the natural defense system of the lungs will resorb, that is, to partially digest the fragments. Fragments that are difficult to remove may have to be extracted surgically. Let me repeat that, the last sentence. In most instances, the natural defense system of your lungs will absorb, partially digest the fragment. Now, fragments that are difficult to remove may have to be extracted surgically.
Doc, a question that has come in says, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Hope you're well. I'm interested in knowing a 75-year-old female being diabetic had pneumonia. The doctor operated on her and she never made it out of the operation. What could cause this type of situation? Jazakallah khair.
Well, that's obviously a collapse of the lungs. She'd gone so far that she couldn't recover from that. And this is what happened. The lungs collapsed, and, well, unfortunately, this poor dear couldn't make it.
Doc, a question has also come in. What has happened to Legionnaire's disease? Is it still around?
Well, that's an interesting one. Yes, the Legionnaire's disease, or it's also called Legionellosis. Let me spell that. L-E-G-I-O-N, that's Legion, Ellosis, E-L-L-O-S-I-S. Now, this is a type of pneumonia caused by a bacteria, and they've named the bacteria Legionella pneumophila. And this bacteria is found in stagnant or contaminated water, for example, in a shower that hasn't been used for a long time, in swimming pools, and air conditioners even, are common breeding grounds for the bacteria. It can also be found in soil around newly dug excavations and construction sites. So there's the Legionnaire's disease. As I said, it will probably continue to be around for a long time. The first well-known outbreak of the illness occurred in July 1976 in Philadelphia. And this happened during an American Legionnaires convention. That's where it gets its name from. 182 Legionnaires were stricken with the disease, and 59 of them died from this disease.
Doc, it sounds like a very deadly disease. And how did this disease originate, and how can it be contracted? Okay, told us with regards to the air conditioning and the swimming pools is a breeding ground. When was the first, if Doc can help us out here, the first contracted or the first known case of Legionnaire disease?
Well, this was in 1976, where a group of people, obviously military people who called themselves Legionnaires, actually had a convention, and they all got together. And as I mentioned just now, you know, 182 of them got together, having a good old boys get together. And unfortunately, they contracted this disease, and 59 of them died. And it's actually contracted by inhaling droplets from a contaminated source. Now, we mentioned those sources just now, the swimming pool, the shower, air conditioner, and so on. Fortunately, it is not spread by person-to-person contact. Cases may be mild, right up to life-threatening. Symptoms can range from flu or flu-like aches and pains to severe pneumonia. So there's quite a range of possible symptoms. The illness may be checked by an antibiotic, and this is called erythromycin. I'm going to spell that. E-R-Y-T-H-R-O-M-Y-C-I-N. Erythromycin. So the illness may be checked or stopped by this antibiotic called erythromycin. Now, home care, that is at home, consisting of rest, of taking an aspirin, and of liquids, can definitely help. The majority of cases are, in fact, hopefully and thankfully mild and will probably even go undiagnosed. People just think they're having a bit of flu. And they'll treat themselves, they'll rest, take a bit of aspirin, drink a lot of liquid, and Bob's your uncle. They're through with it without even knowing what they've had.
It's been a while since I heard that term, Bob's your uncle. Doc, I recently heard that thousands of South Africans have contracted TB, also known as tuberculosis, every year. Now, it's amazing how this this disease has been contracted over the past many decades. How is it affected? Who does it affect? And how is it transmitted, Doc?
Right, TB. Yes, I can remember this way back, being involved in a hospital where there was TB. And the TB was definitely being dealt with by the nursing and doctor staff there. Now, TB, that's tuberculosis, but it's popularly called TB. It chiefly affects the lungs. It develops slowly, and if it's not treated early, it may prove fatal. And as you mentioned just now, 70,000 new cases are reported in South Africa every single year. That's quite a high figure. Now, when an affected person and those that are not undergoing special treatment, when they sneeze or they cough, then others in the vicinity run the risk of inhaling sufficient quantities of the bacillus mist to become infected. So that's how they become infected. People coughing in the vicinity, they breathe it in, and this is how they become infected.
Doc, how can one avoid contracting tuberculosis, especially if one spends time in an infected environment?
Right. Firstly, of course, take care of your lungs and ensure that you are not breathing polluted air. Right. That's number one. So you have to watch your home environment. You have to watch your work environment. You have to watch the pollution that could be taking place from a factory near your home. That's firstly, take care of your lungs. Secondly, if you are a smoker, then do not increase your chances of contracting TB by smoking, because definitely smoking makes your chances of contracting TB very, very much higher than the average person. Thirdly, take care of yourself by eating a healthy diet. We'll always come back to this, because you are what you eat. You become what you eat. Take care of yourself by eating a healthy diet to ensure that you have a strong immune system. Right, that's thirdly. Fourthly, you need to take regular exercise. And again, we come to the same factor, 20 to 30 minutes of walking 4 to 5 times per week. Fifthly, never neglect a cough that continues for more than 5 days, 5 days to a week. If you've got a cough lasting 5 days to a week or longer, then you need to seek medical advice. And that is what you should be doing. Now, sixthly, and finally, in this for this particular question, in a nutshell, eat well, exercise regularly, adopt a generally healthy lifestyle, and avoid areas suspected of containing the TB bacilli. Bacilli being of Spanish for you, B-A-C-I-L-L-I, bacilli. That's a bacteria that assists the TB.
Sorry about that, Doc. My father, you were saying your last part, Doc?
I beg pardon?
Maaf, your last statement that you made?
Oh, okay. Right. In a nutshell, eat well, exercise regularly, adopt a generally healthy lifestyle, avoid areas suspected of containing the TB bacilli, and stop smoking.
Okay, Jazakallah khairan for that. Doc, how can the TB bacteria gain access to my lungs and how can I resist the disease?
Right, as you've mentioned, through a bacillus laden mist or room. So where the bacteria is in the room, people coughing, it's called a bacillus laden mist. In a particular room, for example. Now, the bacilli settle in the air sacs of the lungs, causing a reaction similar to that of flu. Now, several days later, the bacilli may invade other parts of the body, that is, internal organs, the brain, and even the bones.
Okay, Jazakallah khairan for that. The number is 084-786-3132. International overseas listeners, +27 84 786 3132. Doc, what occurs over the next three to 10 week period at the sites of the infection?
Right, the bacilli, as they increase, they'll cause an inflammatory reaction at the sites of the infection. Now, this is characterized by what is called a granuloma. That is a collection of white blood cells and fibrous tissue, which the body is producing as a defense mechanism. In an otherwise healthy person, this granuloma is usually able to kill off the bacilli. Now, progress of the disease may end with this phase, but in some cases where the body has not cleaned out the infection, this is only a temporary halt. Sometimes, even years later, the bacilli may become reactivated if the health of the person deteriorates enough to allow the walled-in or dormant bacilli to break out again.
Doc, in what part of the body does a reactivation normally takes place?
Well, depending on where it is, but they need oxygen, right? The bacilli need oxygen to multiply, to reactivate, and usually takes place in the upper lobes of the lungs. Why? Because that is where oxygen is most plentiful, and they need oxygen. As reactivated, the bacilli can cause dents or holes in the walls of the lungs. Scarring and further destruction are inevitable if this phase of the disease goes untreated.
Jazakallah khairan for that. A recent unexpected question by a family member of a patient who has been through a TB cycle and was now hopefully cured by saying, and I quote, "I have heard that TB used to spread through cow's milk and that was infected. Is this so? And if so, does it still occur?"
Okay, that's an interesting question. The answer is yes and no, but let's have a look at it. Bacilli-infected milk from cows was previously the cause of some kinds of TB. Now that most milk and other dairy products are pasteurized, this is no longer dangerous, no longer the case really. Now, we need to note that cattle in South Africa are checked regularly for TB, but it is possible that, especially in the rural areas, that milk from untested cattle may be consumed. Now, TB is mainly associated with a variety of environmental and social factors, and these are they, such as poverty. Okay, so TB is mainly associated with these factors: poverty, crowded living conditions, malnutrition, and alcoholism. These factors are among the major health problems in rural South Africa. I'm going to repeat it, what I've just said now, that environmental and social factors are really, really ones that are mainly associated with TB today. And under these are included poverty, crowded living conditions, malnutrition, and alcoholism. These factors, as I said, are among the major, major health problems in rural South Africa.
Doc, a question has come in. Assalamu alaikum. How long can one survive with one lung?
Yeah, that depends naturally on, number one, your immune system. Number two, whether you've got any other diseases, whether that is just the one disease. You can last, many, many years, in fact, on one lung if you haven't got all these other factors that will draw you down. So, yeah, it depends on the individual, depends naturally on the diet, depends on the health, depends on the immune system.
Doc, would it also affect would it also affect the age, the person's age?
Yes, most definitely. It would affect the person's age, and particularly if that person is no longer exercising. You know that we are very, very active up to the age of about 30, 35. You know, most rugby players and cricket players have retired by that time. And they don't exercise anymore, so it depends on that as well. It depends on the diet, depends on the exercising, and depends on factors such as any other disease or whatever you might have that could compound this situation.
Doc, another question has come in. Can a mold in a home affect asthma?
Yes, it can. Yes, definitely. The answer is yes.
Okay. Doc, are there any other organizations that work TB sufferers?
Yes. There's an organization known as SANTA, S-A-N-T-A. It stands for the South African National Tuberculosis Association. And it was formed in 1947, believe it or not, quite a long time ago, about 80 years ago. Through the amalgamation of a number of anti-TB organizations. Now, SANTA receives a state subsidy, obviously, to help it, and because a lot of the work is done in rural and impoverished areas. But it also depends a great deal on donations and voluntary work, and provides bed accommodation for the TB patients in a number of centers throughout the country. And SANTA is also concerned with health education, TB testing at schools, the staffing of clinics, including mobile clinics, of course, into the rural areas, and general attempts to improve the lot of indigent patients, because that is where the major problem lies.
Doc, how effective are the prescription drugs now been issued to treat TB?
Right, the prescription drugs, including isoniazid, I'm going to play the spell that. This is a drug that is very important. It includes isoniazid, that is I-S-O-N-I, isoniazid, A-Z-I-D. And they give it the brief INH in brackets to describe this particular drug. So this particular drug, the INH, also Rifampicin, R-I-F-A-M-P-I-C-I-N, and also streptomycin. I think it's, that's a better known one. And E-T-H-A-M-B-U-T-O-L. These have made complete recovery a routine occurrence. Isn't that wonderful? If the patient takes the medication normally or regularly, that he or she will be able to lead a normal life. The treatment usually lasts from 9 to 18 months, and regular checkups are necessary to keep track of progress. Now, if these anti-tuberculosis medications are taken faithfully as prescribed, then no problem should occur. Also, no one else can be infected. If you've got it, you can't pass it on to somebody else. Now, because these drugs have side effects, mostly on the liver and the eyes, I'm going to repeat that. Because these drugs have side effects, mostly on the liver and the eyes, regular medical supervision is vital. One state hospital that I know of, namely Osindisweni Hospital in Verlem, in KZN, were in the habit of keeping their patients for up to 6 months to ensure their full recovery and to ensure that they took the medication faithfully. Now, if the patient does not follow the instructions of the doctor, the bacilli may become resistant to the drugs and in that way become even more difficult to eradicate in the long run.
Doc, how would you pick up, or how would a person know, right, if they have tuberculosis? Like, are there any visual signs?
Yes, of course, there's the coughing up of bloody phlegm. There's a pain in the chest. There's a weakness. Of course, there's the immune system that isn't reacting as it should be. So these are quite important factors. You have to live a healthy life. You have to have a good diet. You have to exercise. You have to keep note of any pains in the chest and see a doctor immediately. As you get older, this becomes more and more and more important. I would actually advocate that an older person, say 60 plus, should have a complete physical checkup every 6 to 9 months. That would be my recommendation.
Doc, is one of the visible signs a loss of weight? A rapid loss of weight?
Absolutely. Also, yes, a loss of weight, absolutely. You haven't changed your diet, but you are losing weight. You're feeling weak.
Because I noticed that that was one of the signs that, you know, if a person has TB, that's the first thing. If one individual sees another individual after many months, and they'll ask him, what happened? You're sick, you got TB. That's the first thing that a person, it comes to their mind.
Yes.
Like, you got TB.
Yes.
Are you sick? You know, like hunchback, and, you know, the eyes are droopy. They're more bones and skin.
Yes, yes. yeah, you're quite right. The course of treatment which a doctor will prescribe will be standard. And it amounts to medication to be taken regularly. It'll depend on the age of the person and the general state of health of that person. And research studies have shown that a person who has been infected with TB and has had a positive TB skin test has a slight risk of further developing TB. The risk is greater in people infected at an early age, especially if still under the age of 35. That is really, really important.
Doc, is it true that a person who is infected or has a TB, they are tested for HIV?
That's quite an interesting question. It's not compulsory. In fact, there's no definite regulation that one has to be tested for HIV. Definitely not. And it's not permitted on every newly diagnosed TB patient. However, persistent fever in a patient who is on TB treatment is an indication for HIV testing. Other signs and symptoms indicating possible infection with HIV virus include exceptional weight loss, which you mentioned just now, but that is with HIV coming in as well. It includes diarrhea, persistent enlargement of your lymph glands, and fungal infections, and neurological involvement. That is, the nerves getting involved. It is a safe rule to regard all TB patients as potentially HIV infected and to routinely take all precautions recommended under these circumstances.
Doc, we've come to the end of our show. It's gone at 9 p.m. Central African time. We say Jazakallah Khairan to you for taking out your time, and inshallah, I'm not sure if there's going to be a part 3 to this, but we will definitely speak during the course of the week, and you will let me know if there's a part 3 that's coming up for this.
Jazakallah Khairan, Jazakallah, and I just say Assalamu Alaikum wa rahmatullahi to my listeners. And do hope and pray that they've taken notes, that they've listened, and I'm sure that they'll have gained quite a bit of information which they can use for themselves, and they can pass it on to their family, friends, and loved ones.
Ameen. Jazakallah khairan. Fi amanillah, Doc. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
And that was helping us through the topic on asthma and tuberculosis, also known as TB. We've come to the end of our show. We say Jazakallah Khairan to you, the listener of Markaz Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, and the team of the Medical Matters, with myself, Brother Sulaiman Yusuf, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. Fi amanillah. Assalamu alaikum.
Ahlan wa sahlan marhaba.
Markaz Sahaba Online Radio. Empowering the Ummah.